This is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour. My guest tonight is Patrick McNamara, and I've always known him as Father Pat. Even though he is no longer a priest, I still call him that because that's the way I've known him all these years. And I want him to give a little background about his background and where he has come from to get to this point. But I knew him, I first met him years ago when he was still a Roman Catholic priest. So he has come a long way since then. Okay, Pat, why don't you give them your background?
Hello, Dolores. Good to talk to you this evening. I thought for sure you'd have an intergalactic telephone number, too.
Well, that one, maybe it will reach intergalactically.
That would be good.
That voice last time sounded like a voice from beyond, but it just suddenly
never
forget.
You never know. You never know.
Okay, tell us about your background.
Great. I remember meeting you, Dolores, when I was Father Pat, and I think I had my collar on.
Yes, you did.
I was a Roman Catholic priest in the Diocese of San Diego for 15 years. I was actually raised Episcopalian, but since my dad had been married before, the rules of the church said he couldn't remarry without an annulment, so I was raised an Episcopalian as my mom was. And then when I was in law school, I happened to be living with a Catholic family, and I just felt this push to go to Mass with them one Sunday and just kind of see what it was all about again, because I'd been as a little boy with my dad. And I found a wonderful community. They were singing, and they were smiling faces, and everything seemed to be on the up and up. And so I thought, well, I'd like to investigate this a little bit more. And I just continued to feel the push inside to share this goodness and this happiness and this godness with other people. So I chose, when I was in law school, to go into the seminary and to learn more about how to share this message of an unconditionally loving God, because that's basically the conclusion I'd come to back then.
That's what
then
you
I
thought. You thought that anyway.
Well, I thought that.
Right? Yes, at the time. Okay.
Yeah. And then I think everything's in divine order, so I can't say unfortunately. I could say what happened in the seminary and eventually getting out into the parishes, into the trenches, as I usually say, it was quite different than my ideal. You know, I thought everybody was singing songs and smiling and loving one another, and I got into a little bit of the politics of it, the history, the secrecy, the rigidity, and the rules and regulations of the church. And so I was trying to balance that out with my message of love. And I think one of the ways that I did that was to be open to and explore alternative belief systems, alternative ways of expressing how much this God loves you. And that got into the areas that are in the book.
Uh-huh. But this is not what the church encouraged, though.
Oh, not at all. And, you know, I think I was really blessed because I only got called on the carpet once from my pastor when he found out that I was table tipping, and somebody had turned me in to him and said, well, he's having seances. So I said, well, no, that's not really happening. And he said, well, amazingly so, as a priest, he said, I'm a scientist. I taught science in Catholic high schools, he said. And this is hard for me to accept and believe, so it makes me nervous. So I would really, really prefer if you did not get involved with it. So I just said yes and then continued on my way. And I had met Adele Tinning, who was a table tinner through table tipper through Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and all of these horizons were just opening up more and more from the four walls of the church.
And you said you began to would go to meetings and to explore metaphysics?
Right. The first part was basically with Adele Tinning, who was a table tipper, and she had monthly meetings, and I'd always be in the back. She would love to say that Father Pat was at her meetings because she believed that the churches were too limited, and she wanted people to see that some aspects of the church were not in this limited belief system, so that was me. And from that avenue, pardon me?
Well, Pat, will you explain to the ones what table tipping is in case they don't know what you're talking about?
There are so many, many forms of communication from God and Spirit, and this is a pretty judgment here, archaic form of where Adele would put her hands on the table, and due to the conduit and clear intention that she had, she would ask the energy of Jesus, of any of the disciples. She worked with a lot of the disciples, or at one time my mother's energy came into the table, and the table actually tips up and then taps out the alphabet one letter at a time. So it was very slow, and if you went past it, you'd have to come back to it. But the messages were just fantastic about love and about a different path that wasn't...
What kind of table did she use?
People. You there?
What kind of table did she use?
You know, she used a regular kitchen-sized table, which was approximately, I'd say... 4 feet by 3 feet, but I've seen her lift a dining hall table, you know, one of those bingo tables, I always call them.
Wow.
She was just amazing, and she's a little old grandmother with arthritic hands, so she definitely wasn't moving it.
I was thinking of a card table, which would have been a lot easier to bake. You know?
Well, she eventually used that when she needed to, but the trouble with that, well, I guess not the trouble with it, I was just led to expand beyond that into the areas of channeling. Because as opposed to getting one letter at a time, which takes a long time to get a message, we can allow ourselves, I found out that we could allow ourselves to be open channels and pure energy to receive messages verbally and right through us, as opposed through the means of a table or a pendulum or, in the old days, the Ouija board, all those evil things that the church thought were evil.
But they were just different forms of communication. But, of course, you know, we have to use them with the right intent as anything.
That's most important. I do a lot of work now in clearing the soul records, and it's very important. It's almost like saying a prayer beforehand. I go through a meticulous method to make sure that I'm getting in contact with the highest, purest information possible. And, you know, a long, long, long time ago, that's probably why the church, the Christian church at least, said that channeling and all the forms of communication with spirit were bad, because they didn't trust the common person enough to have this right connection. And so when they think that something isn't going to be used properly by the common man and woman, then they ban it.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
but you also investigated the psychic surgeons, didn't you?
Right. That was another, you know, I went from table tipping to channeling. One of my friends channeled, the one who we met, you and I together, Jackie, channeled Zarathustra.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's where I first met you.
Right.
And in Chapelbaum, Seattle.
Up in Seattle, right. It was the Great Northwest. And she had a friend named Alex Orbito, who was one of the world-famous psychic surgeons. And this is really crazy with me with my collar on, and he's a devout Catholic, a Filipino psychic surgeon healer man who's a devout Catholic. He loved to have Father Pat there and put me on the table, and I actually felt his hand go into my stomach and come out. Now, I always put the caveat, because I know that some people think I'm crazy when I talk about psychic surgery. I think that there are a lot of fakers out there. There are in religion.
Well, there's fakers in everything.
In every area, exactly. So, again, we have to be discerning. But I've seen him without any sleeves on his shirt and nothing in his hands, and I've seen some miraculous things happen. And the point from there, almost like the point with channeling, is that, come on, the common man and woman need to wake up and realize that we're all called to be healers. We're all called to be communicators with spirit. And these are just methods that show us the way that we can do some of it.
Well, you know, if it's in the Bible, too, that Jesus said you can do these things and more.
He said, anything you believe, whoever believes in me and the one who sent me will do all that I have done and far greater. And that was, you know, for the people that quote the Bible, that's from John 14:12. And
But then the church turns around and says, no, he's the only one that can do these.
Only the priest can anoint. Only the priest can lay on their hands. Well, now they're getting a little saying that other people can do what is a charismatic healing. But basically, they're limiting that. And what Jesus was saying is that anybody can do this. And in 2,000 years since he's been around, we haven't seen too many people raising the dead or healing the sick. It's very interesting, the way to put it, as opposed to judgmentally, right?
So you know, that was something, too, we want to continue, but there was something I remember you said when you first met me, that you had read my books about Jesus mm-hmm. and the Essenes, and that you said you were using the information when you were teaching the young people in your parish.
Exactly.
But you weren't telling them where the information came from, so
right,
they didn't
right.
know, you know, that it wasn't part of the church teachings.
Well, you know, I think I was a master in, I would call myself a multi-level communicator, because I knew that those younger people and adults, too, were hungry for the truth that would let them know how loved they are and how important they can be in this world. And all the messages that you had from Jesus and the Essenes, from They Walked with Jesus, which is totally acknowledging women in the church, which the church hasn't done. Here you're doing this research that says Jesus honored women, and they walked with him, and they were his teachers. So I used all of that in a roundabout way and say, yes, you know, I know of sources that can empower you. And then I'd say, Dolores Cannon, go look it up. Yeah.
But, you know, I have had a client who's come to me twice, who's a doctor out in California, and he goes once a month to see John of God down in Brazil.
Right, yeah.
And he has built a house down there, so he goes down and stays with him once a month, and he actually helps John of God and he with the psychic surgery. And he said
John
he sits right next to him, and there's no way he could be a fake.
Yeah, I've just got some friends returning from John of God this weekend, and thank God they had that wonderful documentary on in this past year, and it shows, you know, where he's using that instrument up the nose. You just can't fake that.
Mm-hmm.
And people have to just realize that you can't limit God, and that God will heal in any way possible, on any level possible.
But there's so many people out there trying to say all of it is charlatans and tricks, you know, because they don't want anyone to think there could be something bigger
yeah,
than
you
us.
You know, there's a part of me that probably has held on to a lot of anger about that, and a lot of frustration that people are so rigid and limited.
Yeah.
And yet there's another part of me that says, well, you know, even some people had to believe in Santa Claus for a while
yeah.
to know about goodness and gifts. And so I'm trying really, really as hard as I can not to be too judgmental. But the fundamentalist and the hardcore Christians or any religion, really,
yes.
that says that you can't do these things are just like they're living in the four walls of a box.
Yeah.
And they don't know that there's a wonderful world beyond those four walls where you can be freer and do so many more things.
Because we all have psychic abilities, but all we have to do is explore them and use them.
Exactly. And, you know, at one of the ends of the Gospel of, I think it was the end of the Gospel of John, they said, there are so many other things which Jesus did. Were every one of them written, I suppose the world itself could not contain the books that would be written. So I think that's exhorting us to go out and do exactly what you're doing. Go out and explore the ways that are also open to us. But I don't know, why do you think that people, why do you think they get hung up on fear so much?
Well, I think a lot of it is the church, because they do try to instill fear.
Uh-huh.
And they're always still bringing up the devil. And those,
yeah,
you know, kind of things to make people think they're going to go to hell if they don't do exactly what they're told.
Boy, that eternal damnation and fire, it will just scare the heck out of people, won't it?
Yeah, because we know that you do have the abilities to do this.
Right.
But you did say a lot of these times when you were going and exploring metaphysics and, you know, sitting in on these things, you said a lot of times you didn't wear your collar because you didn't want attention.
But in both ways, you know, I went to the Native American gatherings a lot. Jackie, who channeled Zarathustra, took us to a lot of Native Americans and opened me up to those ways. And that would be one example where I wouldn't want to wear the collar for the negative effects, because I think that the church has been very detrimental to the Native Americans, and they would try to convert them all to become good little Christians. And so
yeah.
I didn't want to wear that badge. But also, yeah, you just don't want to be holier than thou, and I wasn't trying to impress anybody there, whereas Adele was trying to impress everybody that a Catholic priest believed in her stuff. The Native Americans could care less what a Catholic priest believed in. But I think eventually when I told them, and I was able to share experiences through them, such as getting my power animals, getting my power guides, and getting some messages that they validated. It was a good mix for both of us, where we could not have to put on any airs at all or put on any collars, so to speak.
Uh-huh. Let me see. You did say, wasn't your parish down in San Diego?
Uh-huh, right. Uh-huh.
Yeah, how many years were you a Catholic priest?
15. I was actually in the system about 20 years. I went in the seminary in 1975, and then I left about 1994.
Uh-huh.
To get married. Hallelujah.
Yeah, because I figured we were taking you step by step up to that point.
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember told me the story that you didn't mind being in the church, but it was lonely.
Yes, that's part of the thing, too. I loved being in the church and making people smile and making it, to a good sense, making them cry and making them feel like they're loved and a part of everything. And nothing made me happier when somebody was in the confessional and they would be crying tears of joy to hear somebody say, hey, that's okay, you're human, you make mistakes and God loves you. We just move on. And, you know, it's like the probably misquoted Mary Magdalene story. Well, go and sin no more. At least try and start here and make a new life, a new path and everything. And those moments were really, really joyful for me. And sharing Christmas and Easter and all that was joyful with me. But I'll
never forget. You liked the counseling, too, you said.
Counseling was great because, I try to help a burdened heart become unburdened and give them a little support and break.
But I remember you told me, the problem was, how do you counsel families if you don't have a family? That made it difficult.
Yeah, and I still don't have any kids, and I just bless people that have children because it is a whole different world. And, you know, now Colleen and I have no children, and we can relate a little bit to our nieces and nephews who have families and kids that they're raising, but really it's a whole different world. And we're married, but to be a celibate priest where they live in the rectory with no interaction and relationship, it's very difficult to sit there and counsel and say, well, maybe you should do this with your wife or this with your husband, because none of us had training in the seminary. We took a 6-week course, which was once or twice a week, on pastoral counseling, and it covered so many subjects that there wasn't any time to really learn anything about counseling. So, you know, a lot of the guys, I think, nowadays are getting their master's in counseling, but still.
Yeah, they can't really relate.
No.
But tell the story of, I could say it, but I think it comes better from you,
sure.
Because I remember what you told me, that you were lonely, and when you decided that you wanted to have someone in your life.
Well,
do you remember how you told me, how it happened?
Probably, I remember that first Christmas, which was like about 14 years earlier, where I finished Christmas Mass and Christmas Eve Mass, and I went up to my room and I just bawled. I just cried and cried because everybody got to go home to their families and share the joy of Christmas, and I didn't get to do that. Well, it took me about 14 years or 13 years later to say, okay, God, this is enough. All the signs are there. I've seen a lot of things, and I'm just ready to move on. So would you please bring me a blonde, blue-eyed lover?
I remember you saying, I want someone in my life, and while you're at it, God, can you make her blonde and blue-eyed?
Exactly. And, you know, that was in, it was maybe in May or June or something like that, and that's when I met Colleen in October.
Yeah, they deliver quickly, don't they?
Very quick. Well, yeah, I want things quicker than that, but that was very quick. That was much quicker. And it's amazing how, you know, there's a lot of talk out now today about the law of attraction, and it's what one of the bottom line is what the genie says is, your wish is my command. Well, when you ask something from God, spirit, angels, whatever you call that now, if you ask and you intend it and you vision it and things like that, that's the way to bring it forth to you. So Colleen, on the other end of the line, was at home months and months before, where she actually made out a list of the perfect attributes of her husband that she wanted to draw in. She had 45 items, and she put that on her mantle next to an empty picture frame, And she said, okay, God, you fill the void. You take care of that.
So she was manifesting also.
Exactly. And so on the eve of our wedding, she gave me the list, and she said, see, Prince, what a good, she calls me Prince. She says, see, Prince, what a good manifester I am. I got 44 out of 45 items on the list. So, yeah, it's manifestation, right.
Well, tell us something about Colleen, because she's not your average woman, I don't think.
No, she's a goddess in skins. She was raised in a Mormon background, and that was challenging, similar to the Catholic Church, because it's all man-run, male-dominated. And she was a bright, she is and was, a bright soul who wanted to learn more and grow and experience and to help be a part of the community. And in the Mormon Church, you can't do that. So eventually she just said, sorry, I'm not going to go by these rules, and I'm stepping out of the church.
Both in a box.
Right, yes, yeah. We were both in a box, which was comfortable for a lot of people and warm and cozy and things like that, but we knew deep inside that there was something out beyond that box. And she, as a woman, was so so honoring, I think, to her soul and her spirit to be able to step out of that box. And she did that, and then two like souls met.
Isn't she the businesswoman, though, isn't she?
She's a fantastic businesswoman with a bent towards spirituality. So her businesses that she wants to create and is creating and projects are to help help the world be better stewards of their world. So cleaning up water in countries, or cleaning up the sewers, or adding low-income housing, things like that. So she's a great businesswoman, but I think with all of us, she's got that bent towards spirituality, which is her awareness that we're in a deep relationship with God and spirit.
Because I remember you saying that she was very intelligent and very much into business. So it was like the two of you were really two oddballs that you wouldn't thought would never have got together.
Yes, and in many, many ways, you know, I knew the first time I sat down next to her at the channeling session, she was with her ex-husband, who happened to be driving her out to Seattle, and I happened to sit down on the couch, and she was in the middle, and I felt a bolt of energy go through me, and I've never felt anything like that before. And so Jackie said, I said, what's going on? She said, now just be patient, you know, we'll see what God is up to. So if in my weakness or in my inferiority side looked at her and said, wow, what a fantastic businesswoman, smart, beautiful, all that, I would have said, I could never match with this. But in my mastery, I realized, hey, we could be a good match, and we can be a sign to other people out in the world of what it means to love one another.
Uh-huh. And I remember you did have a lot of problems, you know, coming to terms with this idea.
Yeah, well,
in the church, and you're not...
A little bit, but, you know, when I'd made that commitment to say, okay, God, this is time to move on, so send me the perfect right person, I had kind of had it with all the politics and the gossip and the rules and regulations and the way that the church was becoming more and more conservative. So there was almost a part of me that was unconsciously being magnetically attracted to her and just going with the flow without letting my mind get in it too much, saying, oh, I'm breaking my vows or doing this or that. So
yeah.
I really luckily went a little unconsciously into it through the avenue of love.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the good part. And, you know, it's been a continual growth. We just had our 11th anniversary, and we're still continuing to learn and grow with each other.
I didn't realize it had been that long.
11 years, yeah.
Yeah, because I know when I've met both of you. It was way back then.
Right, that was the first time. I think she was there the same weekend that you met me.
I believe so, because I know it was at Jackie's conference up there.
Right, we just live nearby that now, out by Mount Si at the Rainbow Lodge. We had a great conference there.
Oh, so you're up there in the mountains.
Right, uh-huh, yep.
Okay,
and you
said you wanted to move from San Diego up into that area.
Well, you know, actually, Colleen was moving down to San Diego, and that's when we kind of hooked up and started to become friends and going out to dinners and movies and kind of falling in love with each other. I fell in love first, I always tell her. And then I gave official notice to the church saying that I want to continue my active ministry beyond the four walls of the church. And the bishop kind of looked at me like, what are you talking about? And I said, well, you know, I want to get married. And so they're kind of in a bind at times. They just say, okay, take some time off and then do this. So eventually I left and got married, and we lived in San Diego for maybe 8 years. And I was a hospice chaplain for a while, which was very a great environment where I could just share the same messages.
Yeah.
But eventually the energies in San Diego and Southern California, they're really getting dense and busy and crowded. And so we decided to take some time off for a year, and we moved up to Central Washington.
Because I know every time I go out in the L.A. area, it's the energy there is very heavy, very dense.
It is, yeah. And
I just don't want to be. And I go to California just to do what I have to do and then get out of there and go home.
One of our friends was just there recently, and he said he sensed a rage, R-A-G-E, with people, that everybody was so underlying angry at life and at the pace that they had to go and the hecticness. And it just seems like they're just in a rage down there.
Well, you know, there's many people are moving up to where we live here in the Ozarks.
Uh-huh.
And they said they're leaving the coast. They want to get away from California.
Yeah.
A lot of them don't know why, but they seem to be moving in where we are here in the mountains. And we used to be isolated, but people do want to get away from the coast. But,
yeah,
you know, it makes you wonder, do you think, well, there could be many reasons, but do you think they subconsciously know something's going to happen out there?
No, I'm not too much of a fear, not too much into the scallion map and the fear and things like that. I believe that everything's going to work out pretty smoothly.
Yeah.
I could edit all that. But, you know, I think that there are other reasons why they move. Like, we're in Seattle, and it still is close to the coast, but the trees are so alive here. There's so much oxygen in the air.
It's just having so many people so cramped into those areas.
Yeah.
That's why the energy is different?
I think so. I think definitely so. Right. And it could become a paradise, too. Now, who's to say that some catastrophic thing isn't going to come happen and lower the population of planet Earth? That could happen, but I think, not to say that we're better or enlightened or anything, but I think we're just choosing to stay in a dimension where none of that will happen to us.
Yeah, that's what I'm writing about now in my last book and lecturing on. It's called The New Earth. You know, as we're going into the vibrations and the frequencies are changing as we do shift into the New Earth.
Well, great. Get that book out soon.
But it's already out.
But The New Earth?
Yeah, it's in the Convoluted Universe book, too.
We love that book, and we quoted out of it before. I thought you were going to do a next one because...
Oh, well, you know, I probably will because I'm getting more information.
I'm sure you will.
But, you know, that is in the Bible, too. It does talk about that, those left behind and revelations. All of that goes along with it.
Well, you know, I used to preach as a priest. I used to think that people would think that I was crazy, but I said, I really believe in the second coming of the Christ will come, but it's not going to come through Jesus coming down on the earth and saying, here I am.
Yeah.
It's going to come to all of us awakening up to the fact that we too are called to be Christed beings and to do everything that he did. And you know, that's where I think the separation is going to come. There's going to be a dimension where people who are not going to accept that, they want to continue on in their density and their lower vibration,
they'll
get to do that. But it's almost like in Africa, they don't know anything really that's going on in Seattle. The lower vibration people will not have any idea of us living on this new earth that is very maybe even in the same place as the old earth. Who knows?
But there's nothing wrong with that. It's just where everybody is going to be in their development.
Exactly.
The same thing. I just got back from India last month, and it was a very heavy, very dense energy.
Yeah.
But the same way, with so many people crowded into such a small area. But I think, like out in California, too, you do have the rat race. Everyone is just, it's so hectic, the traffic and the people. And you do get to pick up on that after a while.
And plus with the photon belt or whatever is causing this shift in time and how everything speeds up so much, it makes them even crazier.
Oh, yeah. I feel it when I go to New York, too. I try to stay out of these big cities as much as possible.
Right. Well, I think when people... Well, I think when people get more and more of the message that you're preaching, so to speak, that I'm preaching, that we are one with God and that the kingdom of heaven is within us all, and we start honoring that and living that out in our actions and our words and all those, our relationships, then it will slow the, well, maybe it will manifest the reality of the kingdom of God on earth now.
Yeah.
You know, it's heaven on earth. It's our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, on earth as it is in heaven, you know.
Yeah. And see, that was what I've told people for many years, like you were saying, about it won't be Christ returning as a person.
Right.
It is more like a Christ energy, a Christ consciousness that will spread. That's what I've been told, it would spread all over the world. And
right.
Those who would accept it and understand it, that would be the second coming.
Yep, I agree. And, you know, when I went to go visit the pyramids outside of Mexico City called Teotihuacan, that was called where men and women became gods. And that belief system thousands of years ago was trying to instill in people that they can have this Christ energy, but I knew that way back then they weren't ready to live that out, I guess, in its fullness because they aren't around anymore. But I think this time it's going to be something really different and magnificent and wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping.
Yeah, and those that are not ready, that's all right. They will stay with the old earth to work out their karma, and then they'll be ready to go on somewhere else.
Yeah.
There's no wrong or right with it. It's just where we are in our stages of development.
Exactly, and I think I don't know about all this karma stuff, but, you know, I would say it's when people can eventually... awaken to the fact that they are one with God and they're beautiful spirits. So maybe karma, or maybe those old programs and lessons which I work on clearing out of the soul records, prevent or slow down somebody from this awareness. But I think it's an awakening process that people are being called to.
Yes, because that's what I'm getting now. You know, I still do lots and lots of clients.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of what's coming through now when I'm doing the hypnosis is that they don't go to past lives anymore, because it comes out in the session that the past lives are not important anymore.
Wow.
It's focus on now and where we're going from here.
Yep.
And so I'm getting a pattern of that. So things are definitely changing.
And so is it the their soul that's trying to tell them, like during this session, we aren't going to go to a past life, but we're going to give you ideas about who you are so you can go forward? Is that what happens?
Yeah, because you might call it the soul. I speak to more or less like the higher self,
right.
The higher consciousness, the oversoul, whatever you want to call it. That's what I speak to when I'm doing the sessions. And it comes out and tells us which direction, you know, what we're going to do in the session. And we have healings. A lot of things happen during the session.
Right.
But it's happening more and more now that it's saying, don't worry about the past lives.
Uh-huh.
That the karma has been dealt with. We don't need to go there. And we are more concerned with what's happening now in the person's life and where they're going from here.
Exactly.
So I think it keeps happening. With my stuff, if it keeps happening through so many different people, then I think it has validity. Because people don't know each other, but yet the same information keeps coming through.
Yep, I believe that's very true. And I'm seeing more and more people when I go to clear their soul records, which includes past life, that it's really cleared really easy, and then they may still have the same issues. So I'm saying, well, it's all cleared. You are, I anoint you now as a conscious being to say you make the choices that can help you this way.
Yeah, because it's time. We've been caught in the wheel of karma for too many years.
Yeah.
You know, when I said that in my book, too, the church is always saying Jesus came to save us. I said the only thing he came to save us from was the wheel of karma, because we were caught on it, going round and round, making the same mistakes, not learning anything.
Yeah.
And he was trying to show us how to get off of it through love.
Yep.
And love is the greatest power there is.
It is. And he was trying to save us from our false beliefs, from our imprisonment, from our oppression that we do to ourselves and others.
Yeah. And the church took that and twisted it to where that message never came through.
Yeah. Well, I always say it's a holy Bible, and there are a lot of holes in it.
That's a good way to put it. Yes.
There is some holiness. There is some good stuff in there.
Yeah.
And I think what's really exciting nowadays is the Gospel of Judas, the Gospel of Mary, all the new things that are being discovered, not only through the archaeological digs, but through your digs, you know, that you go do in different consciousness and dimensions. And it's just helping to ring the truth that can set us free.
Well, I know on the news they said when they were talking about the Gospel of Judas, the church was saying it was faked. And
yeah.
They said, well, it's been proven to be authentic. It goes back to the 2nd, 3rd century. And they said it was faked back then. But if that is true, then they mean the entire Bible was faked. It all comes from that long ago.
Yep,
so they
true.
Are contradicting themselves.
Yeah, well, I don't know what the solution is. I think that eventually it's going to be almost like with governments. There will be no more secrets, and
uh-huh.
the truth will be irrefutable, and they'll have to say, look, the truth is that the church went in and got rid of 14 Gospels and 28 books or whatever the numbers are, and they rewrote these four to try and make it a little bit more bent toward their power and authority.
Yes, and that happened in the third council or the fifth council or the...
I think it was the Council of Nicaea somewhere yeah. back then. And
yeah, it was about 300 or 500, somewhere in there is when they did all of this. And, you know, there are people out there that deny that ever happened, but it is
uh-huh.
a matter of record.
Right. But I think it's selective memory. They just don't want to remember those things. So
yeah.
It's funny. It was like when the last pope said, well, you know, only men can be priests because there were only male disciples.
Yeah.
Well, he had total access to all the documents and all the archives that would say no. Look at Mary Magdalene and many other women were very close to Jesus, and they just choose not to see that. And
yeah.
you know, it might not
in
be
my
the
books,
right time.
I found that he had many, many women followers as well as disciples because women were better able to understand what he was talking about from the metaphysical point of view than the
yeah.
men were.
It's very true.
Because they are more sensitive to these kind of things.
Yeah. And
so the church, for some reason, didn't want people to know that he had women followers.
Yep. I guess it was all a power game, but, you know.
It was. And I found out now that Mary Magdalene, she was a very powerful person. She was an Egyptian priestess.
Right. I would strongly suspect that, and the church made her out to be the prostitute because she
yeah.
was too powerful.
And she was taught a lot of the secrets, and that's why her and Jesus were so close, because they understood each other with their way of thinking.
Right.
And they said a lot of the men disciples were jealous of that because
yep.
he could talk to her.
Yeah, Peter was totally. But then I think in the new Gospels that are coming out, maybe the Judas Gospel and things like that, they're saying, no, she had a lot of truth and a lot of wisdom. And I hope that one day, and you've done it through the Jesus and the Essenes and the other ones, where we'll learn more about Jesus' life, that he went out and studied so many different disciplines with so many different women, men, teachers, masters, and all that. And it will just be something that gets us freer and set us free.
And, you know, when I did my research, a lot of it was sent to me, books that are very little known, that nobody knows about. I think I called you one night and told you about the one that was sent to me, where it talks about what happened after the crucifixion. And Mary Magdalene was responsible, her with the 12 disciples that were remaining, and Joseph of Arimathea and Lazarus. There was a whole list of them. They were responsible for forming the first church in England. It was actually there by Glastonbury.
Yep. Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people don't know these things. And she was instrumental in helping in all of that and starting churches in France and Spain.
Yep, and I think that that's all going to be authenticated and confirmed as time goes on. I see it now on the travel station or the history station where they're at least talking about these things.
Yeah, it's like they're no longer bound up with this secret. You can't talk about these things or you're going to hell. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I found some interesting things out about Judas that I'm wanting to see if it's going to come out in this new Judas Gospel. was that Judas was the scribe. He was the one that followed Jesus around and kept the records of everything.
Oh, interesting.
That he did.
Interesting.
And it's always been said that there were no written records. But maybe some of this did survive.
I'm sure it did. It's been repressed, but they'll find it eventually. But that
maybe that's part of this Gospel of Judas, is the records that he kept.
Yeah. And what a surprise that the betrayer turns out to be the scribe. You know, I think even if you wanted to play that game to say was the betrayer, there's a whole divine plan and act and everything. And so that would have made him all a part of the act. So why make him out to be the bad guy for such a long time when in reality it was all a part of the play?
I know. That's what I write about in my last book, was that when the people go through the death experience and they look back, they'll say, it was just a game.
Yep. Yeah.
It was just a play. I could see all the actors on stage and all the ones in the wings getting ready to come on stage to play their parts. But they said when we were there, it was so serious.
Well, what do you think makes people not get that message that it's all a game and that you can choose and you can laugh and just set the stage? What have you found to be the number one reason that's, now that they know that truth, that prevents them from living that out?
Well, I think, you know, we get caught up in the game.
Uh-huh.
We get caught up in the illusion, and we forget it is just an illusion.
Yeah, I was really depressed one day. I can picture the exact intersection. I was going over to the Catholic high school teaching, and I was frustrated with something and really down, and I looked up in front of me, and there was a bumper sticker that said, "Don't take life so seriously. You'll never get out alive." And I thought, wow, we're taking life way too seriously.
Yeah, because... Well, see, I do a lot of work with swamis, too, in ashrams. You know, I talk with everybody, everywhere. And one of them was telling me their teachings with, I think it was Sivananda is their teacher. He was talking about that he went to a movie, which he didn't usually do. It was a horror movie his friend wanted him to go to. And he said everybody was just screaming and hollering, and he kept saying, "Oh, that's good makeup. They made it look like this and this." And said, "Oh, they did a good job with this illusion." But he was able to see it as a movie where the others were getting involved in the illusion.
Yeah.
So he said, that's all life is. We don't stand back and look at it like that. We get all caught up in all the things that are happening.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what it is. Life happens to us.
And when you look back on your career from the moment you started all your past life regression things, can't you see that things are getting better and more people are choosing to see that illusion?
Oh, yeah, because when I started out, they all thought past life regression was just for New Age kooks.
Right, right.
And now I'm teaching classes to doctors and psychiatrists and
before
boards of psychiatrists. Things are changing.
And you're having big conferences.
Oh, yeah, everything is changing, and it's growing.
Yeah.
But you are still carrying on your work, even though you're not involved in the Catholic Church anymore.
Yeah, only in the spiritual arena, though. I always say that the distinction between religion and spirituality is religion is concerned a lot with the what you do, what rules you follow, what you have to, what you shouldn't do and what you should do. Whereas spirituality talks about the who you are in relationship to God and spirit and all the celestial beings. And I think that I'm totally now over in the other ballpark. I've stepped out of the box and am no longer in the box. So I don't go to church on Sunday, and I don't go to Mass. I don't go do the sacraments or things like that. But in the work that I do in counseling, in energy work, in past life work, it's still doing the exact same thing, but with a greater bandwidth, a greater horizon, a more liberating belief system.
You said you're still performing marriages and and speaking at funerals, so you're still doing that part too.
And that I kind of have to slip back into the role a little bit more and put one foot back in the box, because especially with the funeral, some people will want to have the religious overtones to it.
Yeah.
Marriages, they more want to kind of leave that out. That's why they've chosen me, is because they'll know that I'll talk mainly about love and God and how they came together out of some agreement or something.
Yeah.
So,
we do get caught up in those things, and I said that's where they're where they're supposed to be.
Uh-huh.
But
right.
One thing I always try to tell people that I don't like that the church did was bring in this whole idea of sin.
Yeah.
Because Jesus never knew a sinner. If you read the
right.
Bible, he lived with sinners. He walked with them. He ate with them.
Yeah.
He never condemned anybody.
Never. And you know, what's the kind of the synchronistic, or the, how do you say that word? I can't remember. But, you know, the good part about the word sin is that it comes from the origins that say you miss the mark. And oftentimes we do miss the mark. We do fail to love ourselves, love our wives or husbands, and love our spouses or partners, and we fail to be kind to one another. But, you know, you pick it up and you start going all over again because we forgive ourselves for that. We don't get guilty and hung up on it and worry. We say, okay, we missed the mark a little bit. Now let's go ahead with it. And to focus on sinners and Jesus died for your sins and you're going to go to hell if you do this or you don't eat this meat or do eat that meat, you know, it just, that really misses the mark.
That's what I think, because to me, that's what I've been taught writing about. This is, earth is a school. You come here to take classes and learn lessons.
Uh-huh.
And in the meantime, life gets in the way. So you make a mistake. Everybody
yeah.
makes a mistake. It's not the sin that's going to condemn you. Hopefully you learn from that mistake
exactly.
and you don't do it again.
Yeah.
And, but
well,
there are some that don't. They just keep going in the wrong direction, you know, over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
I think the greatest wrong, if you want to say it, is hurting others.
Yep.
In some way, you know, thought or deed. But that's something they have to learn and to come out of that anyway.
That can go from killing people in Iraq or whatever war it is to hating your gay son or your daughter who's married a black man or something like that. So
yeah.
we're hurting people on so many different levels, and Jesus said you need to stop that. It's only about love. You know, love God, love yourself, and love one another.
Because this is just a shell that we're in anyway. The soul
yeah.
has no gender. It has no race, no religion. It's just it is neutral, and
yeah.
it's experiencing, and it goes from, I always say the suit of clothes. This is the suit of clothes you're wearing right now.
Yeah.
And once you begin to understand this, we're all one, that I think once you understand the principles of reincarnation, there is no judgment and there is no bias, no prejudice, once you begin to put it all together.
Well, you know, if the church had taught the belief system of reincarnation more, then I think they would be more open to the fact that, hey, people get into a relationship, a marriage, and divorce happens, and they move on because they were just making up something. I mean, you know, doing some karmic stuff there and clearing it up. Or if there's an abusive relationship going on, you say, okay, maybe that's tied up to a past life, and move on, get out of it, and get into something healthy for yourself. So the philosophy and the belief system of reincarnation would help the church so much.
Yeah, because making the person think they have to stay in that relationship because they're not allowed to divorce and not allowed to get out of it.
Right.
And,
well, what do you think?
You know, there's so many terrible things that people do to each other, and that's where we have to deal with that. And I do it with my counseling and my work, too.
Right.
But
well, from the stories that you've gained from your higher beings that you're talking to, do you get a sense that it's rapidly approaching to the fact where entities such as the church or wars and divisions and all the craziness will soon be gone?
Yes, we're in the middle of all this now. It is a big change that's happening.
Yeah.
And even my books on Nostradamus, which I haven't spoke about those yet on these shows,
wow.
but on there he was talking about that the church would one day dissolve and perish because it was built on, he said, feet of clay and feet of sand.
Right.
The foundation was wrong. And
yeah,
then eventually it's all going to collapse. But he said religion, if you want to call it that, will return to what it was supposed to be in the beginning.
Exactly.
And I think that was what Jesus was trying to tell everyone. It just got twisted and distorted.
Yeah, I find no fault at all at people getting together to you know, in small groups and sharing the goodness of God and Spirit and what we're here to do. But, you know, then when it gets into the rules and regulations and say you got to follow this and don't do this, that's where it gets askew.
Yeah, because that's what I found. That was the way Jesus, if you want to, he didn't want a church. He said that. He did not want a religion or a church. But they had meetings in people's houses and
right.
and caves and on the beaches of the banks of the Galilee. And that's all they did was talk about these things. And they let anyone be the leader or talk. They didn't want any one person to be over anyone. It was sharing their experiences and their yeah. thoughts and what they've learned, how to heal and metaphysics. That was what it was supposed to be at the beginning. And it all got changed and distorted.
Yeah.
You know what I found, too, is that reincarnation was the basis of every religion in the world, every religion.
Wow, wow.
Even the early Christian religion.
Right, right, I know that.
And that they all the religions started out in a good way. They were all based on God. Then man comes in and starts making all of these rules and regulations
yeah.
in all of the religions. And that's what I think kind of messed it up. Man telling people, you must do this or this or this.
Yeah. But
instead of going back to the basics of where it all started.
Well,
and it was all based on love in the beginning.
When I was down in San Diego, I channeled Yahshua, which was an aspect of Jesus. And we did it for almost 2 years every month. And we kept a little like transcribed of it. And he said, you should do a book. Speaking to my publisher, you should do a book called Back to Basics. And if you didn't do the whole book and you just put it down to one word, it would be love. And
yes.
it was these small gatherings where he would love to come in and kind of put his foot up on the chair. And he said, this is what I used to love to do, is sit around the fire and talk to people and just share the love of God and share the basics. And you know, hopefully that's what we're going to come back around to.
That's what I think. But right now I'm watching the clock, and I did Dr. Bonnet last week, and he said, boy, that was hour went fast.
It does go.
But I do want to tell them that, you know, I published your book, was called Beauty and the Priest.
Right.
And it was the story of how you went through all of this and made yeah. your conversions, you know, out of the... It's like a bridge, so you can go from Catholicism
yeah.
over to metaphysics, and you really can combine the two.
Yeah, when I tried to write that was my point, you know, was to say, okay, here are points in each one of these chapters where if you're going to stay connected to a Christian community or a Catholic community, you can still do both of them. You don't have to throw the baby out for the bathwater. So you're exactly right when you say it's a bridge.
Okay, because I'm going to have to be signing off here, but I do want to say that Father Pat, I can't get out of that term. That's what I've
okay.
known you by. He is going to be a speaker at our conference that we're putting on here in Fayetteville, Arkansas, the Transformation Conference. He's going to be here, and he'll be speaking. He's also going to be interacting with people during the breaks. So if anyone comes, you'll be able to talk to him. And I know we're going to have a wonderful conference. And anyone who wants to find out more about this conference, it's going to be June 3rd and 4th in Fayetteville, Arkansas, the Transformation Conference. And if anyone wants to find any more out about it, our telephone number is 1-800-935-0045. Or check in on our website, which is Ozark Mountain, O-Z-A-R-K-M-T, .com. Now, Pat, as we sign off, tell them how people can contact you if they want to work with you.
And I've got a website called Sacred Healings. That's sacredhealings with an S, .net, and that has all my contact information there.
Okay.
So,
all right, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in just a few weeks, Pat.
I am very excited about reconnecting with you and sharing all this with people. It's great.
Okay. And thanks for coming on.
Okay, thanks a lot, Dolores. Bye.
Bye. Good night.
Good night.